Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
No Jumper, coolest podcast in the world. OG Macro in the building. How you doing?
What's up, Adam? Kicking it.
You feeling good? Get right up in there on the mic. Don't be scared. Pause.
Feeling all right. Decent.
Feeling decent?
I survived last year, so I'm happy.
Yeah, you're a guy who's been through a fucking absolute avalanche of shit the past few years, huh?
Yeah.
Let's talk the update. Let's talk about, I'm just very curious to start with the fucking flesh-eating bacteria situation.
Yeah, man, that shit just kind of hit out of fucking nowhere, bro. That was a kind of wild situation.
What, you got in the hospital or some shit?
All right, so no. So I bought my girl like a diamond ring. That part's important because you have to understand why I didn't think anything was wrong.
Okay.
So I bought my girl a diamond ring on her birthday, which is like November-ish, late November.
But is this will you marry me shit?
No. This is like I really, really love you and I never bought a bitch a diamond ring.
Okay.
Right? So I get her a diamond ring or whatever. And the next couple of days, I end up with like a cut on my eye. So I'm thinking like we was just like fucking or something and my eye got cut. You know, nothing of it.
Okay.
And over the next couple of days, I have to go to Seattle, handle some business. So I get to Seattle and everything's cool. And then like later at night, my fucking eye, it feels like, you know, like you get like a hair or something stuck in your eye,
uh-huh.
Trying to wash it out. So I'm spending all night trying to wash this shit out and nothing's moving, right? So I'm like, what the fuck is that? And over the next few hours, I end up in a situation where some racist shit happened at the hotel. I end up outside. They end up putting my shit outside. It's a long-ass story with that. But
whoa.
More or less, over the next 2 days, my eye end up swelling up. And I'm at my boy, Mr. Nice Nice. Shout out to Mr. Nice Nice in Seattle. I end up at his house, and my eye swells up to like the size of a fucking baseball.
Okay.
And so I catch a flight back to L.A., and once I get here, I go straight to the hospital, and they try and tell me that the only thing that's wrong with me is that I have, like, an infection in my eye. But I'm realizing, like, as I, like, scratch my scalp or whatever, like, there's, like pieces of my scalp coming off. Like, just tiny pieces, though, right?
Uh-huh.
And they ignore it. You know, they ignore the fuck out of it, and they keep giving me this medication that I end up being allergic to.
Did you feel like they just didn't give a fuck?
They didn't give a fuck. I have a lawsuit against them, a really big lawsuit against them, but I'm not going to talk about it because okay. It's a lawsuit.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, long story short, maybe a couple weeks later, after they released me from the hospital, they tried to, I released myself because they tried to fentanyl me up and I wasn't going for that either.
Really?
Yeah. They took me off of the pain medicine I was on in the middle of the night and tried to fentanyl me up.
What? They had you on some regular shit? What? Some Vicodin or something?
I was on Dilaudid at first, which is already really strong.
Okay.
Right? And, in the middle of the night, they switched out my IV Dilaudid for, fentanyl.
And you could tell?
Yeah, I woke up and I was so fucking sick. I was like, I was like throwing up. I was dizzy. I was confused.
Uh-huh.
And so I looked at my board to try and figure out what was going on. And I realized it had changed. So I checked myself out. And like 3 or 4 days later, my fucking scalp pretty much died. I pulled it up myself.
What, just huge chunks of your scalp?
I reached into my head and I was like trying to scratch it. And I realized I couldn't feel it. I couldn't really feel the scratch.
Uh-huh.
And so I stuck my nail into it. And I pulled, and my fucking scalp came up.
And so at this point, what is going on in your head in terms of what you think that this might be? Also, Josh, can I have my coffee from my office?
At that point, I'm pretty sure something is eating me alive.
Wow.
I'm pretty sure. Because at the time before, they didn't know what was going on, and the eye infection already went down. You know what I'm saying? So I was pretty confused. And so if the eye's done, what else could this be? And we had already went through everything else. They'd already tested me for everything you can test in the world. And that's when I finally realized it. You know, like, the shit came out. I started Googling everything you can Google. And that's when I realized that it was necrotizing fasciitis, which is flesh-eating bacteria.
And so you think you got it because you are allergic to the medication?
No. So it turns out you can get it from, like, really brackish water, which makes sense. Because
brackish? What's brackish?
Like dirty, infected, bacteria kind of water.
You were drinking water. The water?
Well, I was in drinking Seattle, and Seattle is a very rainy place. And remember, I was stuck outside, middle of the city,
right,
going through shit.
Okay.
So I think somewhere along the line, I picked it up while I was in Seattle, And shit, man, that shit almost killed me. It almost killed me 100%.
Wow. And so at what point did it start to get better? Are you just trapped in the hospital for months and months?
No, I got out of the hospital and I didn't trust them because, like I said, they tried to fentanyl me up.
Right.
And,
okay.
You know, I don't know if people know about fentanyl or fentanyl addiction.
But you're somebody who's probably done a fair amount of opiates in your life, right?
But fentanyl freaks you out. Well, yeah, you sip lean, pop perks and all that shit. But fentanyl is a different level.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I've seen people who go from, you know, popping 30s to they taking the fake 30s and then they smoking fucking fentanyl.
But why would the hospital feel like they had to put you on a way stronger painkiller? Like, was the pain actually that bad?
The pain is that bad. Oh, okay. No, the pain is not even was, because I'm still healing.
Really?
So the pain is that bad. It is. It's, I mean, your flesh is falling off, bro.
Right.
You know, so it's.
And what's the healing process like? Well, but you ejected yourself from the hospital. So is there a point where you had to go back and
treatment? I had to go back and do more treatment and shit like that. And
what's the treatment like?
Sit around pumping you full of fucking medications. When I got back home, I started doing like natural remedies like aloe and black seed oil.
And you feel like that stuff works?
It was working. Yeah, it works. It does. It's a process, but it does work. And I had one of my homeboys, he like abandoned his whole life and moved up to LA and took care of me like 24 hours a day.
Wow.
You know, day in, day out, at nighttime, fucking waking up in the middle of the night, putting fucking aloe and stuff and medication in me. So, yeah.
Damn. So was there a point where it almost seemed more likely that you weren't going to make it in this whole situation?
Yeah. I remember distinctly I was watching the fucking Saw series from like the beginning to the end.
Right.
Because my mindset was like, okay, let me watch something where people are in more pain than I'm in. And it'll even it out.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And at that point, yeah. Because I remember scratching my head. I was like, that night it was like, I had a sensation like, man, just scratch your head. And I scratched it and fucking half a pound of flesh just fell off my fucking head. And my head was just like, it was a fucking blood puddle on the floor. And I remember at that moment, I just screamed, you know what I'm saying? Like, what else to do?
How do you describe your mind state dealing with this to your mind state with dealing with the whole car accident situation?
Cool, you know,
right?
What I'm
because
saying?
That seems so manageable in comparison.
That was so easy,
but it probably seemed kind of shitty at the time. But in comparison to this, where you don't even know what the fuck is going on,
the eye shit was easy because it was like as soon as it happened, I got surgery. You know, as soon as it happened, I called a plastic surgeon, and
it's something boop, that they're used boom. To. They've done they this a million
you know,
times.
They told me like, hey man, you'll probably keep your eye. You'll be good. You know what I'm saying? Like the surgery kind of expensive, but it'd be all right. You know, they put it back together and I paid for it and everything was cool.
So do you still have to wear the eye patch because of the previous situation? Or
no,
is that
I'm wearing an eye patch because of now.
Right.
So I lost a lot of flesh. Like, so it ate down to the bone.
Right.
So if you can imagine regrowing, you've had injuries before and shit like that.
Right, not so, my eye so much.
Yeah, I'm not your eye so much. But if you heal all those layers down from, you know, from the bone up.
Right.
It can take a while. And a lot of people have to go through amputations when they're dealing with necrotizing fasciitis.
At a certain point, were you just thinking that was pretty likely that you were probably going to lose an eye?
I didn't know how you amputate a head.
Yeah, right. What are you amputating? Yeah,
I didn't know how the fuck you cut a head off.
But was it ever a worry that it was going to spread to the rest of your body and shit, too?
Well, that was the only good part. I wasn't seeing it spread to, like, my hands and shit. I remember at one point it had spread to my cheeks, and I had, like, these fucking holes. Like, you could damn near actually, like, see through my face.
Right.
And I remember at that point, I was really fucking creeped out.
Yeah.
You know, after off air, I'll show you some pictures if you want to see them.
I mean, to be honest, it's kind of nasty. Yeah.
It's some gruesome shit. I'm not going to lie to you. It's some fucked up shit. But
so
I got them.
During all this, though, you said that your girl left you because of this?
No, she didn't leave me because of that. That's not really what happened. But she treated my thing was like this, all right? So me and my girl wasn't together for a lot of time. And when we're not together, I don't really give a fuck about that. Okay. You know, I don't care about that. Like, whatever you're doing is what you're doing. But my thing is, like, we've been best friends for years.
Oh, really?
Right? So it wasn't about pussy or nothing like that. It was just, you know, you're my best friend, right? You know, like, I moved from China to here for you, right? So at the end of the day, if something this major is going on, you should be there.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And she wasn't there at first. Like, she was not. Out there, you know,
really?
What I'm saying? Like, and like I said, my friend had to move up and abandon his whole life to take care of me, you know. And this is somebody who, like, you know, I took around the world and, you know, did everything you can imagine. If girls dream about the shit that I did for her, you know. So at the time, I was like, you know, really like, yeah, fuck you, bitch.
What do you think her motivation was with that? You think she was just fucking scurved out, or did she want to just move on?
She had a really rough year herself, though. She had like three family members die back to back. Her uncle died, and then his son died, and then her granddad died, like back to back to back.
That's
like,
rough.
Not even like 5 months apart. I'm talking about like her uncle died, and his son died like a couple weeks later. And then her granddad just randomly found out he had like stage 4 cancer like a month or two later.
You know, it's crazy how we just spend so much time fixated on all kinds of superficial ass shit of who's beefing with who and who's dating who and shit like that. And then like occasionally there's just shit, real shit. Like somebody gets sick. In a general sense, it's obviously like the way you got sick is like a very random ass situation not like I know anybody else I've ever heard that happen to, or like, but what you're describing happening to her too, like just losing a bunch of family members. Crazy, like people right? go through real ass shit that has nothing to do with the industry, music, entertainment, etc. And in case life. You know, it's like I remember like Cam was always my favorite rapper, and then all of a sudden his mom died, and it was just this like, it's weird. It's like it's he just disappears.
Yeah, for bro. That 6 months.
Or no, she got cancer. I'm sorry. She didn't die at that time. She got cancer, and then he has to like move to Florida, and he's taking care of her. And it was kind of crazy for me to see my favorite rapper like just retreat from the spotlight for a while to deal with some real shit.
Yeah, people don't understand it either, you know? Like when you just because we're still human, you know. And they and with my thing was too, you know, during most of this, you know, I'm still living at the time I was still living downtown. Mm. So, you know, I would like, you know, walk out, go get groceries and shit like this. And luckily I can honestly say thanks. I fuck with LA so heavy because a lot of my fans and a lot of people would just like walk up and just like give me hugs and shit, like, yo, bro, we see what you're going through, like you know, keep fighting, like keep going, like you changed my life, like you know what I'm saying? A lot of people talk shit about you, but you know, without you, I wouldn't have made it through this. I wouldn't have made it through that. So I want you to know, like, you can make it through this. Like, you got us. Like, and I mean, it wasn't like 1 or 2 or 10 or even 100 people. I'm talking about it was a lot of people. A lot of people. That's still crazy. People to this day.
Did you feel like at any point that people were joking about the shit too much? You see motherfuckers laughing about it on Twitter and shit that ever offended you?
That's some bitch-ass shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, I never let it affect me, because at the same time, you gotta understand, like, I was more worried about dying. You know what I'm saying? Like, I wasn't sitting around reading fucking Twitter comments and shit. To be honest, I was playing fucking Division and Xbox and fucking medicating and shit.
That was the only thing that was keeping you going?
That was it.
Medicated, so you just fried off pills, just playing video games?
Fried. I mean, because at the same time, I didn't have anything else I could do.
Right, what are you going
to
do?
I didn't want to be around people because I was afraid about, you know, I got open wounds and shit, so I didn't want anybody to get any kind of infection whatsoever, which, thank God, I didn't get any infections. Until I got into, like, 2 fights. I got into a couple fights.
With who?
I'd rather not even bring their name up.
What, like street fights?
Yeah, like some street fights.
And then you spread it to them through?
Nah, fuck no. It's not
I thought that's what you were saying. I'm like,
No. I got into a couple fights, and their dirty ass hands got in my wounds and infected it. Yeah,
who are you fighting out here?
I mean, I'm still me, bro.
You're still in the streets?
To a certain point.
I can't imagine getting in a fight.
It's not even you got to be in the streets. It's just I'm still a grown ass man, and it's going to get to a certain point.
Well, you're at the bar.
Well, I mean,
is that what does it?
It's just like, bro, I mean, I keep a lot of my shit under wraps, you know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't come into the game trying to be like the hardest nigga, but I got all the credentials.
But are you still going out and shit? Because I feel like I've seen you a lot of times, like on Sunset, going to the bars and shit.
I'm still on the rocks.
Right.
On the rocks on Sunset.
I was just listening to it on the album. I'm like, oh, he's on the rocks. He's got the rocks.
That's my house. Everybody know that. Everybody go to On the Rocks know that's my house, period.
Really? So that's, you want to be known, like when you die, that's going to be like the way it is with like Lemmy and the Rainbow Room and shit. You want like that? You were part of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not even just like wannabe. We done some real shit in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, we have some real stories in there.
Right.
I'd rather not tell on the podcast.
Really?
But yeah, we got some real shit going.
That's dope. You don't hear a lot of people really like having pride and just holding down an establishment. Do you feel like it's like an episode of Cheers when you walk in there? Everybody knows your name.
Well, I feel like it's part of being a rock star. I feel like as a rock star, you're always you're supposed to have a hangout. That people remember you for. You
that know is cool.
And all these rap, I'm not a rapper, I'm a rock star. So I feel like in a city of rock stars that I had to carve out my own spot.
Mm.
And I did. You know what I'm saying? And my respect was earned. It wasn't given. It wasn't like people just was like, oh, yeah, let the black kid in and all that shit like that.
Really? So it's like you got to get beat in to hang out at the Roxy?
Nah, you don't got to get beat.
It's not some real shit, no?
But we got members, though. We got keys. Like, some of us got keys.
Really?
Yeah,
we got. You have a key to the bar?
Yeah.
You're like fucking Barney from The Simpsons.
I'm 076. Yeah, we got numbers. We got key numbers.
Damn, you're down with Mo from... You ever have a flaming Mo at the bar? You know what I'm talking about? Do you watch The Simpsons?
I don't watch The Simpsons. Damn, I'm not a Simpsons person.
All right, I feel you.
I'm a Rick and Morty Family Guy person.
Oh, you're a modern. You're a millennial. How old are you?
I'm 27, 28 in April.
You feel like a young old head?
Yeah.
Mm.
Fuck it. I don't understand these kids.
You've seen too much at 28.
I seen too much, yeah. I did too much, seen too much.
It's rough when you're in that position. A lot of people at 28 just still getting fresh in the game. They're like, ooh. Perks.
I just put up a fucking a tweet like yesterday. I was like, man, I was thinking about it too. I was like, man, we had the same problems. You never woke up bored in Milan.
Right.
And that's true. Like, I really have woken up like fucking bored in Wiesbaden, Germany, or bored in Milan, bored in Rome, bored in Toulouse, France. Like, niggas ain't never even been to Toulouse. Niggas don't know where Toulouse at.
I don't know where Toulouse is at. I was just in Tulum. Sounds like it's like
you
a think, letter
yeah,
to away.
Y'all talking about Mexico, where all the thoughts go. Y'all talking about Tulum.
Do they go there?
That's where all the thoughts go. All the thoughts.
I don't really see many thoughts.
Posting in Tulum.
Now you're right. Like, I just
oh,
see some
yeah,
thoughts.
Oh, man, oh, yeah. Big
is,
balling.
Is that not cool?
Shit ain't cool, man.
Damn, all right.
Group trips, bullshit.
You know, I thought it sounded cool, but then I went there and I realized that it was, like, played out. They're like,
it's played out.
But
bro.
That's okay. I'm okay with played out. There's a reason why it's played out. It's close.
Well, I mean, you fuck porn stars, so, I mean, you're different.
Sometimes.
Sometimes.
I'm not just a dick.
You're not.
OG
I mean,
Macko. Let me do my Nardwar thing. OG Macko.
I mean, Adam, we go back, man. People don't even know we go back like that.
I know. I remember that I went to a Dash Radio show that you did that probably lasted about two episodes. Pretty much everybody in LA at some point has had a Dash Radio show.
Hell yeah. My partner dropped out on me.
Right. Okay. But I just remember that at one point you ended up in like a very extended rant about sort of like types of jeans and who was wearing those types of jeans earlier yep. on, and you were talking yep. about the Migos, and you were talking yep. about Uzi,
yep.
and talking about the jeans. I don't remember which types of jeans, but
we was talking
take
about
me through
all,
the lineage.
All of Rick, all that Rick Owens. Everybody know what's up. Everybody know when they come to me and the Rick, how I feel about the Rick.
That's sort of like early 2011, 2012 period where hip hop started really fucking with high fashion. On like a street level.
And honestly though, they weren't fucking with it heavily though. They was like dibble dabbing in it, you know? Like, and that was what that conversation was about, actually. Mm. We was talking about how right now everybody trying to get credit for all the fucking fashion shit.
Mm.
But the real fashion heads they kinda overlook us because people just steal our shit and keep moving. Just like he just walked in like, oh man, nice boots.
Mm.
You know, the boots.
You mean like young kids in Atlanta in general, like people from your generation?
I mean like all these random rap niggas and all these hypebeast ass kids under my generation. Like they don't understand where the fashion comes from in a sense. And they don't understand why we even got into it either. You know what I'm saying? They just like, oh yeah, let me go buy some. Oh, I see Travis in a new Rick, let me go buy it.
Mm.
And they really can't even afford it either. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
But they gonna go get it though.
That's just still important to you?
In a way. I feel like fashion is an expression of everything that you are.
Mm.
And I feel like if you're trying to do fashion, then you shouldn't do it. I feel like it should just be whatever you are and whatever it is. You know what
right.
I'm saying? Like, it should just come out like that. And that's as deep as it should go.
But if you just do what comes natural, like for me, I just wear like a fucking t-shirt and jeans every single day. And I don't think anybody's looking at me like, oh, he's into fashion. Because it's just not interesting enough. You have to do some weird shit. You got to have a weird
t-shirt
jacket.
And jeans could be deeper than just t-shirt and jeans because do you care about the fabrics in your t-shirt and jeans?
I mean, do I care? Yeah.
See, you can wear the same t-shirt and jeans as someone else, but your fabrics can be so phenomenal that you are not even in the same
but
fucking universe as them.
Very few people get credit for being into fashion who aren't spending huge amounts of money on clothes, which is kind of the part that I have an issue with. I just don't really see that as like a reasonable use of my funds.
You don't have to spend a whole lot of money on fashion if you are logical about it. I mean, especially nowadays where they got shit like Grailed and all these secondhand hand-me-down things, you
right.
know. You don't have to be a dickhead and go spend your first check on this shit. Wait on it a little bit.
Mm.
If it's true fashion, it'll last forever anyway, you know? So you don't have to get it as soon as it come out. You can wait on it.
Mm.
And it'll still be there.
I just don't give a shit.
I mean, you shouldn't give a shit. You fuck porn stars.
Right. So, but, you know, there's a certain extent to which I'm 36. I feel like I'm getting closer to like 40 and stuff. And I see certain people that are in sort of a similar position to me. Like the most obvious one, like Joe Budden, where he wanted to transition out of that rapper role. So at a certain point, he had to stop wearing sweatsuits and start wearing the nice pea coats and the fucking wingtip shoes and all this shit. I just don't know if I got it in me.
I don't think you ever have to do that, though. I don't think you ever have to do that. I mean, one, you're Adam.
Right.
22.
But maybe at a certain point you want to be thought of differently. Does that ever occur to you, like, that maybe if you wore a suit every day, you could just be thought of differently?
I think you can be thought of differently without wearing a suit every day. I mean, look at what you built in a short amount of time.
Mm. But but just like you're saying, though, clothes are an expression of who you are.
It is. But if you don't give a fuck about it and you can still build an empire, then that is who you are.
Mm. But don't you think you're sort of like also projecting? Like, there's a reason why, like, you and your young generation from Atlanta, et cetera, were attracted to all the designer shit, because it represented a different level of taste and quality that wasn't available when you were really young, right?
Originally, we was wearing the high fashion because we was doing scams and jugs and shit. And if you look like money, then money will come to you.
Mm.
That's originally why we started doing it. We originally started wearing all the high-ass fashion because we was trying to get the kids to come let us do work while running scams with them. Now, whether when you ran your scams, you took people off and you didn't give them no money, or you was like somebody like me where we ran our scams, you know, so we paid people off and made sure they got a lot of money so they would keep spreading like, hey, yo, go fuck with bro because he give you money. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Either way, you still got to look nice.
Will the unwritten scam history of Atlanta ever be communicated? Will there ever be like a documentary?
I hope not. Nobody ever get a game up like that.
Why is the scamming world is still thriving from your perspective?
People still eating off that shit, man. Mm. People still eating to this day. And every time I hear one, I ain't gonna say no names, but every time I hear these little niggas giving up game, like it's cool, like just to get on for a second, that shit lame, bro. That shit hella lame.
You think TJXX is snitching?
I'm not
on the
saying
game?
No names. I ain't getting into no beefs. I'm not doing no shit with you, Adam. I'm just saying, at the end of the day, it's niggas who got kids, niggas who got families, niggas who got cases, and all sorts of shit, and niggas who fighting their cases, using the money that's coming from these techniques that's been thriving for years, and more they keep putting that shit out there, the less and less effective it is.
I'm corporate now. I feel for MasterCard and Visa, Discover. I hate to think of the shareholders suffering.
Fuck them.
Just kidding. But do you like who put you on? Did you have like an OG? Like, in terms of the scam and shit, how was it explained to you? Because there are so many legends and stories you'll hear about such and such rapper to LA, Airbnb jugging.
But see, the Airbnb jug started. I will give this one nigga this credit for this. The Airbnb jug started with my niggas. I ain't gonna lie. We did that first.
Mm.
We turned that up.
Who else? Name names. Statue of limitations is up.
I'll give this nigga one credit. The nigga Theo Ferragamo is the nigga who really put everybody on that. He got everybody out here. I remember when niggas couldn't even come to LA because they couldn't survive out here, and he started putting niggas in Airbnbs. And that's the only credit I'll get that nigga. I'll give him that 100%. He did that.
That's funny to think of that being an era in which, you know, a lot of young kids were able to sort of make the leap to LA through this specifically.
And it's turned on so many careers because niggas was able to come out here and stay out here and thrive like that. But I remember back in the day when I used to run into Quavo and all sitting him at the Apple store in Lenox and shit back in Atlanta.
Saying they were scamming too?
Back in the day, we all was. What? Back in the day, that was a long time. I mean, they're multimillionaires now, so they don't give a fuck.
Do you think Takeoff's pieces were hidden?
Takeoff when he was in pieces. Takeoff, I don't even remember Takeoff being there. I think Takeoff was too young.
Oh, he wasn't down?
Well, think about it. Takeoff was younger than that.
Does that impress you when you think about it? Offset went from scamming at the
Apple
store. So where is that now? That's crazy.
I always knew Offset would make it because Offset is just a savage. He's a savage in all sorts. You know, when it comes to the hustle, to the mindset, to where, he always distanced himself from the bullshit that's around. So I always knew Offset would be fine.
But there's only a few people, like Yachty is one of the only ones with like a record of getting arrested for scamming in the game, right?
I mean, that's what I'm saying. You get caught, you're not that good at it.
Isn't that crazy, though, that he's like clean ass image and shit, and he's like,
he's only a scamming nigga, right?
When I did his first interview, I didn't even know it, and then I like somebody sent me his Wikipedia afterwards. I'm like, what the fuck? I wish I could have asked him about that. He definitely would have shut it down.
I got all the armed robberies and shit, and niggas don't know about that either. It's about what we choose to show.
Really?
That's the other thing people don't know, you know, it's what we choose to show.
Really? So you beat mad cases people don't know about?
When I got signed to QC, I had cases on me heavy.
Really?
Yeah.
That's kind of part of the QC ethos, right?
Yeah, I think it's part of it. I think you have to have heavy cases on you.
You got to be in the streets?
Yeah, you got to. I feel like you got to be in the streets to even get over there.
You mad at QC still, or is that relationship a little, what happened?
I don't talk to them, but I'm explaining this in a way where it's understandable. From a business aspect, I understand.
That they tried to freeze your career at a certain point?
But Let's look at it at the facts, right? Uh-huh. What artists do you know that hit like I hit that never went on tour with a major artist? I mean, never. Like, not even one. What artist did I go on tour with?
But none. What was the motivation on their part, do you think, to hold your career back? Was it the fact that you were just volatile?
I think
you
weren't easy to get along? I think I was too rambunctious. Right. I think from what it was that I wasn't a controllable asset. I was an asset, but not a controllable asset. And I feel like if you are trying to manipulate the way that they end up manipulating, that you need a controllable asset. And I'm not going to say who or what I feel became a controllable asset, but I think history shows itself to what it was. And if you look at what I was able to accomplish, I mean, you got every time people hear OG Parker, it's me, baby. You know what I'm saying? Every time you see the Deco records, every time you hear the Larry June records, you know what I'm saying? Every time you look at the history, who was running around with me then? Doja Cat, all these people. You look at it and you say, damn, well, where was Macko in the history of shit? Macko was always there in the history of shit. So QC had plenty of opportunities to say, look at what we're doing. Look at the fashion. Look at where this guy's coming from. But if you do that, if you give me that light, if you give me that shine, you can't take it back.
You think it was just a personal dislike that you guys developed for each other, that it seems to me like that was probably bigger than any other element.
That was bigger than anything, and that was because there are some things that happened off camera that was real.
Really?
And
tell us about them.
Nah.
No?
Fuck no. Some shit, no matter how I feel about somebody or what it is, some shit remains in the streets.
Mm.
And it'll always be that way. And I respect P to a level where, you know, I remember some shit happened and P pulled up to my house in the hood. You know what I'm saying? I remember P was able to call me like, hey, man, grab, come, you know, some shit going on. And, you know, I'm right there.
And you were there.
And he remembered that too. You know?
So do you feel like that relationship was strong enough that you should have been able to work through whatever kind of issues y'all had?
I feel like at this point, we should be able to work through it. I don't want them involved in my career or like that. I'm just saying, like, you giving out bags of money to see who can free JT and all this other shit. Nigga, just give me my just due. Because we had conversations about this, you know what I'm saying, that this empire getting built. You know what I'm saying? We had this conversation. You know, if you look at the history of shit, there was no QC over at Motown or QC over at Capitol Records before there's OG Macko. OG Macko gets us to Capitol Records. OG Macko gets us to Motown. It was me and rest in peace, my homie Young Greatness.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? It was me and Greatness over at Motown. And then Skipper wasn't
there yet?
Skipper, but no, they never did. Everybody was there. Migos then was still signed to 300. Rich was still signed to 300, but nobody was able to sign to Capitol or Motown. The interest wasn't big enough.
Do you feel like them having a Yachty and them having Migos and shit like that, do you think that allowed them to basically, do you think you would have got a different level of attention if they didn't have other things that were succeeding at that time?
I feel like that was the plan. I feel like you know, I love Yachty to death, but Yachty was just a recreation of what was already going on in the aspect of, you know, you got the selling team, you had OGG, you had the producers, you have the colorful character with the fucking blonde hair raging and shit, you got the colorful character with the red hair raging and shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I just wasn't so happy and fucking go lucky. I was more kick-ass and fuck you, bitch.
Yeah, but are you willing to acknowledge that, like, Yachty probably just had, like, this likable sort of, like, fun
of
persona
of
that you maybe didn't have?
Of course you're likable if you're not saying, fuck you, suck my dick. You know what I'm saying? Like, where every other second, mom was like, yo, fuck you, suck my dick. And I still feel that way. Fuck you,
but,
suck my
but
dick.
You started to piss people off, don't you think?
I don't
like,
give a fuck. Hey, we're doing business, not feelings.
Right.
And I went to a label that I felt like it was, we're supposed to be the street nigga label, right?
Uh-huh.
All right, so it was certain stuff that, like I said, certain stuff that went on off camera that was street nigga shit. You feel me?
Uh-huh.
It's in the streets. Keep it in the streets. Don't put that involved in the business. If niggas can't handle their self in the streets, that is what it is. Like, at this point now, I got nothing to fear. You feel me? Like, nigga, I almost died last year. You know what I'm saying? I almost died the year before that.
Right.
So I'm supposed to be afraid of death? Why?
But do you think a lot of people would be scared to even speak on the QC situation?
Yeah,
because
of course it will, because those are very, you know, those are people of respect.
Right.
And I feel like also it's a lot of fuck niggas out here too. Like I said, even no matter how I feel about certain shit, I still have enough respect for P where it's certain shit that happened I would never speak on, because certain shit remains in the streets. Uh-huh. And you keep it to the code of the streets. And that's what it is. And if you've never been in the streets, then I don't expect you to keep no code of the streets. If you're some square ass nigga, then you go and tell Adam 22 what happened to you and go tell mommy and daddy. You know what I'm saying? But if you're a street nigga, then it is what it is and you let it happen. But I also feel like, just like if you go and you make a million bricks after you rob me for a brick, right? When the time comes, give me back my million bricks.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? You ain't got to give me back all the bricks you ever made.
You think they made millions off you?
I think the process in which I got us to made them enough money to all own boats, Ferraris, Rolls Royces and buy chains every week. I think without my album that never even got released, without the process that I got us to, without us, me getting us to Motown in the way that I got us, I feel like there is no QC to Empire in the current state that it is.
Right.
Does that Empire happen still? Yeah, I believe
so. Is it hard to not sort of turn into this like resentful person that is just like
angry? I did
that
already. Did it already.
You did that persona and you feel like you're past it now?
I did the resentment already. It did nothing but eat me alive.
Mm.
And that was more deadly than a flesh eating bacteria, you know, just to sit there and stew in that shit, you know, and it fucked up my creative process and it fucked up my process as a human being. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't able to grow because I was too busy being pissed off. I mean, when you look at it and say, damn, bro, look at all I was able to accomplish. Look at how much stuff was stolen from me. People taking my sound, people taking my look, people taking all this. And all this label got to do is say something. Like, they ain't even got to give me all the credit in the world. Just say something like, man, y'all remember Macko doing all this shit beforehand? Like, y'all remember all this shit?
Right.
You know, I remember when my first projects got put on streaming, I had to like actually do that myself. I had to figure out a workaround to do that. They wouldn't even put my music on streaming.
Because for a while your shit was getting taken down off SoundCloud and streaming sites and stuff. But what do you think their motivation was for that? Do you think that they really just wanted to absolutely freeze your career so there was no chance of you?
I mean, what other motivation was there at that point?
Right. Because you don't hear about a lot of people getting that kind of treatment in the music industry these days.
You feel what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if we can run through a bunch of shit and say, oh, it could have been this, it could have been that. But, I mean, what other real motivations are there? And I remember when I was doing things on my own, I would get responses. They never knew I was getting the backdoor responses or people was telling me what they was doing, actually.
Mm.
You know, but they was. And I found out when there was certain magazines that wouldn't pull me up or talk about me or speak on me because of certain things. They was in fear of the relationship with QC falling apart, so they wouldn't talk about me. You know what I'm saying? Or certain artists that everybody like they hard, but they really bitch ass niggas because they wouldn't say certain shit because they was so afraid. Oh yeah, QC won't fuck with me. You know what I'm saying? Managers, oh, QC won't fuck with me. And at the same time, QC was still doing what QC was doing and still not fucking with them. That's the craziest part about it. QC still didn't fuck with them.
So, it's funny because I'm picturing Coach K or P watching this, and I feel like they probably don't give a shit. They'll probably be like, oh, that sounds kind of gangster.
Yeah.
Like, fucking, why would they have any problem with being represented that way if they seem like they can toss their weight around enough to make people, or if they could not even say anything and already have certain magazines be shook to fuck with people? I mean, at this point, I interviewed you and Skip it. So, I mean, if they're gonna be mad at me, then
that's all I gotta come. Like I said, I'll say it. Yo, P, hey, we good, bro. Just those bags that you keep handing out to everybody, just throw me one. That's all I want. I feel like I did a lot of hard work. I feel like I did my part. You remember that conversation we had in Studio B that day? I feel like I did my part on that. So if you can fuck with me, I would appreciate that. Other than that, wish me well. I'm doing fine. You know, Macko got that flame just dropped. It's going crazy.
Do you feel like that is the kind of thing from your life experience that you've seen happen a lot? Because I'm not going to be honest, I don't really see, even the richest guys I know don't seem like they're really like throwing people bags just to be nice.
No, I don't. I mean, nor do I expect it to happen, but I'm still going to say what I say.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, because at the end of the day, I've done what I had to do this whole time and I've been fine.
Right.
Just like you said, you see me around LA. I don't look like I'm having any sort of problems. Every time you see me, I'm doing just fine. Pop up in the same spot.
So how do you feel about your financial situation right now? Like probably a lot of people are curious.
I wish everything could be better. I mean, I'm not riding around in fucking boats and coolicons.
Me neither. No yachts.
You know what I'm saying? Of course I wish that I could have that. But I also feel like through my own work ethic and through my own drive that if that's for me, that I will attain it. Mm. At the same time, I will never not say what I believe is duly owed to me.
But it must have been like maddeningly frustrating at a certain point because you still have this certain amount of clout attached to your name at this point because of the songs that have popped off, but then you have someone stopping you from even putting out more stuff. So you feel like
my
sole thing that I have to offer is my artistry and I can't even put my artistry out. Yeah. It's got to be tough.
It was tough. But I mean, nobody took pity on me. Everybody thought I was just some fucking one-hit piece of shit, you know, and everybody told me I was supposed to be trash and yada, yada, yada. People even now say, oh, yeah, QC dropped you. I'm still signed to QC right now, you know?
But so, do you wish you could put an end to that, or?
Do I wish I could what?
Get out of that contract? Or is that?
I wish I could leave QC and stay with Capitol. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If I could leave QC and stay with Capitol, I would be fucking ecstatic.
But you're able to put music out now, right? Yeah. So you're just hoping that QC doesn't give a shit?
Not really, nothing like that.
Because I noticed that when I was on your Instagram that the link to a YouTube video that is in your bio, that link is not there. And I was wondering, did they...
No. That was one of my artist videos that was up there. No. That's a good thing. I released enough stuff through my own content even from the beginning. Like, my YouTube was already my YouTube.
Okay.
You know? So I did enough stuff in the beginning where I secured my bags. And that's a good thing. And no, I don't worry if QC care or not. I know for a fact at certain points they don't give a fuck. And I know they're not rooting for me at the end of the day. I've had conversations where it's just like, oh, you know, I think of the words where I didn't hold it down when times were bad, which I'm trying to remember when times was bad for QC, but
that you didn't hold it down?
That's what I heard. That's what was told to me. That the problem was I didn't hold it down. Times were bad. That's what I heard. Those were the exact, I think that's the exact quote. I can say that's what it was. I didn't hold it down, which I don't know how I didn't hold it down, because I mean, look at shit. You know, they got a restaurant in fucking Falcons, in the Falcons Stadium.
Right.
You know? Like, how did I hold it down? They damn near run Motown and Capitol, and I don't see anybody else who got us there.
Uh-huh.
I don't see who got us to Motown.
Right.
Who got us there?
I mean, hey, they would probably say Yachty and Migos.
No, Yachty got signed after me, so that's impossible. And Migos was still at 300, so that's impossible. We're talking straight facts. I ain't got to try and flex my dick. It just is what it is. Like, I got us there.
Right.
And you could say that's what it is, or that was their maneuvering or whatever it was, but I wanted to go to UMG. And they told me that, you know, Capitol was a better move for the label as a whole.
Right.
And so I went with Capitol. Like, you know, let me hold down the label. Let me do what's best for the label. Because UMG wanted me.
Did you think, so looking back on that, you regret that decision?
Depending on what they do after, you know, depending on how they feel. If my phone rings or I have a conversation with somebody to talk to them and they can maybe clarify, like, why things went that way, yes or no.
But I mean, it's
because you never know. Maybe I went with UMG and my life turned out different on some personal shit that I wasn't... that I'm not happy with.
But it's like a classic situation. Whenever anybody ends up signing through somebody, you know, they always end up regretting any sort of middleman being involved in that situation.
Always,
we see it with Uzi playing out constantly right now.
Always. But I mean, with me, I never look at things purely financially, because I feel like the finances can always be gotten another way.
Uh-huh.
So who's to say I don't sign with UMG and the things happen in my life and I end up, you know, not being around? Maybe my mom gets sick, you know, or maybe... You know, life happens different ways, because one blessing begots another curse.
Is that something that ever crossed your mind? Were you ever like, is this karma? Did I do something horrible and the fucking universe is against me?
I know I did enough. I did enough good. I did a lot of bad, but I know I did enough good. I know I did enough good.
I don't believe in that karma bullshit anyway, so.
I believe the karmic essence is real, but I believe that it takes. I know murderers who make millions.
Right.
So I don't believe it works the way we think.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, if you're a murderer and you could just manage to avoid the cosmic energy that you have coming back your way, don't you think?
Until you die, yeah.
I mean, we all know tons of little kids who get killed in traffic. Well, period. I mean, not that we know them, but we've heard about it.
But we heard of it, yeah. You know, we got little kids with brain cancer and shit, so clearly something's not working the way we think it is.
Yeah.
But maybe that's once again, the karmic essence of their parents begotten the son. You never know. You know, and I don't choose to sit around and think about shit like that, because that's what would have drove me crazy during the time, you know, I was going through the worst of the worst. But at the same time, you know, all those things that I went through is what allowed me to make the music that I'm making now, and the music that I've been able to get all these messages, like Vanity, where I hear kids tell me like, yo, you know, you saved my life with that. I was really suicidal, and I heard, you know, the pain he was going through, and it changed my life. And when I tell that to my friends and the people closest to me, I mean, how do you quantify that?
Right.
How do you quantify the amount of lives I saved? And I wouldn't have made songs like Vanity if I wasn't going through the things I was going through.
When I was having the conversation with Trinidad James recently, he was talking about how he feels like he's been pretty much like left out of the conversation of, you know, influential rappers who did song, like, you know, he's just basically saying that even though he is oftentimes thought of as a one-hit wonder, which is a thing you deal with as well, his one hit had massive cultural ramifications, but it doesn't really get mentioned like that. Or you feel like you're in a sort of similar
Nick
box?
Nick is a real Atlanta legend, though. I remember when I was running around in the streets, we used to go shop at Nick's store at the Underground. That's how I actually even met him, before he was Trinidad James.
Okay.
He was just Nick at, I think the name of the store was Ginza. We used to go buy all our drip from Nick. And I feel like he does get left out of that shit. Cause I know if I was at his store shopping and buying shit, I know I wasn't the only one then, huh?
Right.
So I feel like it was a whole lot of rappers and a whole lot of people who was going to see him had that same fashion before he blew up at Trinidad James.
Right.
And after he blew up at Trinidad James, I feel like there was a lot of adjustment that came from his style. But I also feel like there is one thing. He didn't
get
go
a little bit more.
He didn't go so much and so deep into the kids. He didn't go and function with the kids as much. And I feel like that's why he might be in that position. I'm in a position where some people call me a one-hit wonder, but the other side of that is the people that don't call me a one-hit wonder call me a certified legend.
Mm.
I don't have there is no other side to mine where it's like either one-hit wonder or you're this or you're that. It's either one-hit wonder or you're a fucking legend and all your shit is crazy and you ahead of your time.
I mean, you and Trinidad James both kind of got hit with the asshole, like, persona thing. And when I say that, I sort of mean like the media, you know, there was like just certain incidents that just sort of crafted us, yeah, like a narrative. Mm-hmm. With him, it was like, oh, the hate New York thing. With you, I remember there was a big Meninist controversy. You
and
called
that was
yourself
the craziest
a Meninist
shit ever, because Meninist was a fucking joke,
right?
It was a joke Twitter.
This is like us very early in our understanding of like feminism and male toxicity.
I basically
and
got
shit
me
like too'd. That. Yeah, but just for.
For
quoting
nothing,
a Twitter account.
For quoting a fucking joke Twitter account. People tried to say I was some misogynist fuckboy.
I remember a girl threatening to stop hanging out with me back in the day because I followed the Meninist account.
Because you followed the Meninist account, yeah. And people was, I mean, that's just what I'm saying. Look at the pieces of shit that judge us.
Right.
And say we do, like, I mean, what kind of piece of shit are you to try and ruin somebody's entire life and the way they feed their family over a fucking joke Twitter account? And these same people will sit at home on their stolen Wi-Fi and tell themselves that they're a great person and da-da-da-da. And really just a piece of shit. And I had to realize that part, too. Just like when people tried to tell me I was, they tried to say I was beefing with Future, too. Remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
They tried to say I was beefing with Future.
Because what did you say? Oh, you said something about
I said 56 Zans ain't cool in real life, though.
I mean, that seems very self-evident in retrospect.
I said Future is my favorite. The thing, what about it was, or the tweet stream was, Future is my favorite artist. The whole thing was about the kids following what rappers say.
Mm.
And what I said was, I think the kids should be held to a standard where we believe in them more than to say, oh yeah, whatever a rapper says, they're gonna do. Because next tweet, Future is my favorite artist.
Right.
Next tweet, 56 Zans ain't cool in real life.
Right.
And the only tweet that got kept was, 56 Zans ain't cool in real life.
And you know what's crazy is that now you see Future saying, like, you know, apologizing to Juice WRLD for promoting drugs. You see Juicy J on Twitter the other day saying,
If I ever made you do drugs, I'm sorry.
And that's what's crazy, though, is that Future and Juicy J aren't like Lil Pump. Lil Pump, if Lil Pump were to say, you know, I was promoting drugs, he was 16, whatever.
Who gives
Juicy
a fuck?
Juicy J was a grown-ass
man.
Grown-ass
man, right?
And it's at a certain point, I think nowadays, it would be much harder for somebody like Future or Juicy J to make songs like they were making at that time period without people
trying to say they
checking
were
them and saying,
yeah,
like, hey,
and
we people, don't need to be promoting that
and
shit
and
so
and
blatantly.
That was supposed to be a destruction of my career, right?
Right. But what was Future's response? What did he actually say?
Well, Future talked on the phone.
Oh, you actually talked on the phone.
I'll tell you what he said now, because it's so many years later.
Okay.
So as soon as that happened, Future was actually in a Huffington Post interview at the exact same time.
Right.
And I was riding a car. Future has a guy to his team named Twin. I'm not sure if you know about Twin, but
okay.
Twin got Future on the phone right then, and we talked, and he was like, little bro, what did you really say? And I told him exactly what I just told you, and he was like, oh man, you don't let them do it to you. You don't let them use you. He said, man, you can't never let them turn us against each other. You can't, that's what they want to do. He said, that's what they want to do, man. They want to try and turn us artists, us black men, they want to try and turn us against each other and make a narrative where it put you down and bring me up, or bring you up and put me down. But we can't never let it do that. He said, at the end of the day, I'm Future. What I crafted is what I crafted, and I got to live that. He said, at the end of the day, whatever drug you shit I say, whatever it is, that's my record sale because of that at this point. And whatever demons come from that, that's what I got to deal with. But I mean, I look at all the success I'm getting from that too. You don't see me crying about it. So you can't, if you want to be the hero, be the hero. I agree with everything you're saying, but just know it's gonna be shit that come from that, and that's what they're gonna do to you. So be careful about it. And I said, man, you like my favorite artist, bro. I would never even do no shit like that. You know what I'm saying? To you to try and put you down or nothing, bro. I got niggas who dying off these shits. And at the time I did, I had a homie that just passed from the Zans and shit. You know, I got homies who dying off this shit. So I was just trying to make a statement about what was going on.
Right.
You know, he gave me the condolences and we get off the phone.
Right.
And that was it.
That's actually a really interesting look into how Future views that situation and how he had like a private conversation with you. Cause it's like, obviously when he's speaking to the public,
right,
he might have a different filter.
Right. But that made me gain even more respect for him.
Right.
Like when we had that conversation, it was like to hear his voice saying it, you know what I'm saying? And to know that he was actually looking at the perspective of, I see what you're trying to do.
Right.
And I do respect it, but know what they finna do to you is finna be terrible. Like, finna fuck you over.
It's interesting that he already, even that early point in his career, he was like very, very conscious of the fact that the media was really looking for any opportunity to take young, hot artists from Atlanta, whatever, and find a narrative to say that they have beef with each other. Because when you see the media talk about Future so much, he almost never has any comments about it.
Almost never.
Which is kind of like a thing you learn over time if you're a real big artist, is that maybe you don't have so much to gain from getting in there.
I'm barely doing any interviews after this one. I just, me and you always said we was going to do this interview forever, so I wanted to come do this interview.
Well, you have a very interesting story. I really decided I was going to take a step back from doing so many interviews this year because I just don't like doing a lot of the bullshit ones that I kind of fucked with before.
I ain't gonna lie to you. A lot of these niggas ain't really talking about shit no way.
I mean, it is always weird when you get an artist in who like you like the music a lot, but then they got nothing going on upstairs.
The whole thing is dumb as fuck.
That's always kind of a weird experience.
Sad. I mean, at the same time, I say, man, you know, the thing that terrifies me is that I have to live in a world with these people. I have to grow in a world with these people who don't understand basic concepts of government, basic concepts of consumerism, basic concepts of anything, you know, and everything to them is just a fucking meme or fucking tweet or a 15-second video on Instagram, and if you ask them anything deeper than that, they don't know. And they try and ridicule you for knowing more than that. And I think the time in which being ignorant was cool died a long time ago. Now you can't, the ignorance cannot be cool in the age of information.
But that's what's weird, is that you very much found your success at a time period where you were able to just make a sort
to
of
manipulate people.
An unabashedly angry song with a sort of ridiculous over the top hook that just sort of caught on, because wouldn't you look back at that and say that you were at a point in your life then where you really didn't know shit about the world and you were coming from a much less nuanced perspective? Now you know too much.
I know much more than I knew then, but I knew enough. I knew enough then. And to be honest, I wish I wouldn't have affirmed so many things that I knew then. Now, right? I wish I would have like kept it a mystery and kept it in the dark for myself, for my own peace. Because I see so many people who aren't aware of things, and I'm just it's apparent to me, and they live such happy lives.
Right?
You know, like, you know, that whole ignorance is bliss thing. But I feel like, yeah, ignorance can be bliss, but you still have to know.
Right.
Even if you don't want to know the monsters in the closet, you still got to open the fucking closet, you know? Right. And I feel like when I made that song, I knew the monster was in the closet, and I knew that if I let the monster out, that what would happen, you know? I knew it would happen. People always say, did you know? Well, I only knew because I was a rapper, what I call as a rappity rapper. Like, niggas like Jid and all them, you know, rappity rapping ass niggas, that's their whole thing. Can I out-rap you? Can I do more punchlines or greater metaphors than you? I felt like I was doing the same thing at a level. Me and Jid even got songs back then where we going back and forth, you know what I'm saying? And that shit wouldn't get me nowhere. You know, it wasn't getting me where I wanted to go. It wasn't that it wasn't respectable, but it wasn't getting me where I wanted to go. And I wanted to be a rock star. And I realized I can't be a fucking rock star coming up here fucking rickety rapping and rappity rapping and shit. I got to go out here and rage and get the people something that they can just fucking scream at the top of their lungs and feel like they free.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And that's where the whole you guessed it thing happened.
Right.
And that's why Fuck Them happened right after that, because that was my thing. Like, you know, I want to free the people. I feel like it's enough anger going around right now, but what if we like to, like, alchemy, you know? You can exchange that anger for something positive.
Yeah, I mean, you deserve the credit for just being in tune with the culture enough that you could tell that there was something, that there was a different attitude or energy coming down the pipe in terms of rap music, you know, that this, there was going to be a lot of aggression coming out that we maybe hadn't seen through, like, even the earlier in the 2000s. You know, there's a lot of weird rap happening, but it wasn't There wasn't screaming.
They wasn't showing their emotions about it. And if they was, it was like all downtrodden and fucking druggy and shit.
Because when you have Odd Future and ASAP, who are sort of like painting this picture of like this fun young lifestyle,
right?
You kind of need the angry element. And if you've been watching the culture long enough, you always can see that happening. That like you can only have disco for so long before you have like punk energy to counteract it. You know, yeah,
they got to balance each other out. And you know, that's why it happened again when you come with like people like 6ix9ine came in. He came in right on the edge, or you had you had to balance. Like I feel like you know, rest in peace, X. You know, X was. And I told him that, like, yo, you are exactly what I was meant to be. Mm. And the fact of you're combining those worlds of you have this melodic embrace of the dark parts of the world that happens, and then you are able to free those same people in the same album, sometimes in the same song.
That was the crazy shit about him, was that he was able to do it both. Because when you look at hip hop right now, it's like you have very much the sort of like rougher, angrier shit that is popular, and then you have like a lot of shit that's just much more melodic that really almost doesn't have anything to do with rap at this point. Those are like the two sides of it, and he sort of personified that.
I told him that to his face, and I'm happy I was able to do that at LA Live. I was like, yo, bro, you know, that's really, and he asked me about that too. He was like, bro, how do you get through it? Like, he's like, bro, knowing that, because he told me, he's like, bro, I know. That's what he's like, I know. He's like, well, how do you do that shit, bro? How do you get through it? Like, how do you get through knowing like this was supposed to be yours? And he said it, he didn't even say it like real arrogant, you know, like he said it in a way like he just turned around, like, and you seen like, you know, it was a fucking massive packed out sold out crowd, and he was like, this was supposed to be yours.
Wow.
Like, how do you deal with that, bro? Like, that shit would drive me crazy. And if you ever talked to X, you know, he was real about when he said shit.
But did you take offense to it?
Nah, fuck no. Like, I knew what he was saying.
Right.
I was like, well, I mean, as long as somebody like you happened, then it was all worth it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's what I told him. That was my response to it. You know, like, as long as somebody like you happened, bro, it was all worth it. And I remember I still got the video on my phone. He did that song, Suicide Pack,
right.
Fuck My Life Up. Right after that, he ran up to the top, to the second level of the shit, and was like hanging off of the rails, like he was trying to jump off. He did that right after that. And it was like, in that moment, like, you know, I felt vindicated just from the fact of him existing. That's why I remember him dying was so crazy to me, because it was like, you know, after all of that, after everything get realized, then they just like take his flame out like that.
Right.
You know?
That's crazy. Yeah. Like, when I think about him, I always just think about like, he was just such a volatile person. The energy around his whole career was so crazy that it, and when I think about that first tour he went on and how fucking insane that tour was, and how every day there was a different story about some crazy shit.
Yeah.
And it just makes me wonder, like, is somebody whose flame burns that bright, like, it almost feels appropriate that it didn't burn for that long.
It, like somebody threw nitrous and gasoline on it, right?
You know, it's like in some way, there's a little bit of a silver lining to the fact that we don't know what a 50-year-old Kurt Cobain is like.
Yeah, no.
That we only got to see this short period.
At the same time, though, you can't. I mean, I feel like I look at it like this. You know, if X was Kurt, do I get to be Ozzy? Because you got the Lord of Darkness. You know, still Ozzy. You see Ozzy. Ozzy is still Ozzy till right now. And I mean, Ozzy them did. I mean, you want to talk about fucking rock star?
Right.
They rock starred, you know what I'm saying? But it never got to him. And I always think about that too, dude. I mean, X's flame was fucking massive. Do I go ahead and accept my flame growing bit by bit every year? You know, whatever, do I let my legend? Because my legend now, it builds more. Every year, you know, more and more kids realize what I was able to bring to the game, or how I was able to change things. Even though there's a whole bunch of people just like, what did he do? Those people are just the fucking dumbasses.
But do you feel like you're ever going to be able to really capitalize on that? Because at a certain point, it's like a lot of the biggest names from that early era, at the end of the day, it's not like they're really doing numbers. I'm not sure. Even the biggest names, it's like kind of hard to imagine them selling out big shows and shit like that. I mean, hip-hop traditionally just has a very, very short memory.
I feel like hip-hop does, but that's the thing about it. I once again, I'm a rock star. And I feel like it's up to me and my actual fans, or the people that say they support me, you know, or those people who say they're my friends. Because that's another thing I learned. You know, I had a lot of friends, you know, in the industry. And they think, I don't know if they think I give a fuck about them now, but I don't. I just realized what kind of pieces of shit they are. You know, like you trying to let this, holding on to this bit of fame and ignoring a phone call is how you hold on to it. You know, that's your grasp at it. Like, oh yeah, I'm still too big to answer this call.
Right.
You know, like that's all you got. I mean, what the fuck are you really doing? And I always wonder why people do that. You know, if you got so many guys who feel like they was left behind on this rampart, right? Why don't we all come together and put shit out? Right?
Right.
And if we push it out, enough of us all push it out together, right? When we get some kind of acclaim for it, if your base was this and my base was that, why not work together? But you look at these fucking mega dickheads and everybody complains separately without working together. Uh-huh. And then they say, oh, no one loves us. I mean, you never know who loves you because you're too busy trying to dick ride or get to Future and get to Kendrick and all the people at the tippity top top instead of working with your fellow man who's like right there next to you. And I think that more so holds all of us back than, you know, the oh, would you ever be able to live up to those expectations you have of being a legend?
Mm.
I feel like all the legends got to be legends together. That's how the legend, you're only a legend because the overall story is told, right?
So who would be on the, like, Legends of SoundCloud Rap Tour that we're proposing here?
If you ask me, you got to, and Dex is still right here in the middle of the kids now.
Dex?
Dex, definitely.
Dex, very influential, yeah. But, I mean, he's sort of someone who just felt like they were just making the same song over and over, and it just sort of people, they lost interest.
Dex did a lot of things to his career on his own.
He's too many those, features, too.
He's one of those people who I can honestly say I don't feel like anybody fucked over their career, but
he sold. Didn't he sell his SoundCloud to some random person, like, very early on?
I think so, I'm pretty sure
that's a real thing.
You know? Also, when you come into it, though, you got to think about it like this, too. Even if it's... You see how hard it is to even remember some of these people? Like, I'm sitting here now, like, trying to rack my brain, like, okay, who's there? Because you got people that pop in and pop out, like OT Genesis, right? He pop in and.
But it's interesting because he does a good job of still staying relevant in the industry and stuff. He's still at Rolling Loud. He wasn't booked at Rolling Loud, but he's backstage at Rolling Loud, cooling with everybody, you know?
You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think a lot of people are able to drop in and drop out. And that's a blessing. I'm more of a hermit. Like, whenever I decide to come out, it's always love.
Because that option is always there for you to be one of these guys who's backstage or Rolling Loud, kicking it with everybody, taking photos with everybody, sort of, you know, nurturing relationships, basically just clout munching. Everybody does it. It's a weird thing. Right. I feel weird when I'm in that environment because everybody's doing it to me.
Right? It's so weird.
I'm doing it a little bit to other people, too.
People like us who are more, you know, we in life. Because like I said, man, every time me and you see each other, it's just some in life shit.
We're just old enough to have perspective on what, you know, a lot of people who are like 20, 21 and shit, it's like they're, if they could be backstage or Rolling Loud, just talking to motherfuckers and networking and shit, they're so excited. Yeah, that is so thrilling.
Yeah.
You get to a certain point where it's like, okay, but how does this affect my shit business-wise? Yeah, how does this affect my career?
That's all I think about, you know? Yeah. Like, is this affecting my business? Is this going to drive my business up anywhere? And I think maybe we trap ourselves a little bit by doing that. You know?
But do you feel also with, like, the eye situation originally and then the flesh-eating bacteria, that it's like sort of, it forced your hand. It forced you into being a bit of a hermit.
I was forced in a way, and especially, and then me going over to Europe and China so much, too.
Mm.
You know, while everybody else was doing tours and shit over here, I was over in Europe, I was over in China, I was over...
Just because there were bags to get there?
That's because it was bags. Bags in China, bags in Japan. I've been to every fucking country you can imagine at this point.
Right.
And honest to God, I mean, who's upset about that?
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So I have friends and, man, I got friends all over the world, man. I could probably spend a good 20 minutes just shouting out people around the world, and I think that's a blessing too. But you're right, it forced my hand a lot, you know, because people during those times when things happened, I wasn't able to come and mesh with the kids over here, you know? Or when that whole switch happened from being people like around my age to the kids like pumping them. Like, you remember us being in the studio with pumping all them, but I wasn't gonna stay in the studio with pumping all them. I didn't understand what the fuck they jokes and shit was when him and G Nils and all them was around. Like, I didn't get all that shit. You know, Nar used to be around selling with the fucking boards and t-shirts and shit. Like, it just wasn't an environment that was conducive to me.
Well, it's like that, you know, they're a couple generations after you. So it's like they're sort of doing all this shit. Like, I remember Pump being in Hollywood, drink and lean for the first, not like the first time, but it's like very early times, in his career where drinking lean and being in Hollywood with a rental seems like this shit.
Yeah.
Pump already is not rolling around getting in trouble like that. You know, he knows he needs to stay in the crib. And if he's going to be, I don't even know. He said he stopped drinking lean. I haven't actually seen him drink lean in a while, but I
see that's what I'm saying.
I'm looking at his story, looking at his eyes like,
Still
looks all right. It looks a little sober. Yeah. You know, how's your, actually, pause. I have to piss like so bad that I never do this, but I gotta piss so bad. All right. Piss break done. Okay. What's your personal drug use like these days? Like, how hard do you party?
I stopped smoking weed.
What?
I barely drink at all.
What? Even when you're at the bar?
Even when I'm at the bar.
What are you drinking in there? Sprite?
No, I'll get one gin and juice.
Okay.
Still got to keep it player, but okay. Just one. Right. Only one. The only thing I actually do take is my pain medicine. That's about it.
Really?
And I mean, I'm kind of forced to take it. Yeah. I have no choice.
Would you prefer not to?
Yeah. At this point in my life, yeah. Fuck yeah. Because it's been a year straight. I went 26 years without ever taking any pain medicine whatsoever. And then going from that to being forced to take pain medicine every day. All day.
Right. Shit sucks.
Sucks. And people, you know, that's why I tell my friends who get high on the same shit I take to function. You know, even through this whole interview now, I'm like, I'm in pain like fuck.
Right.
But I refuse, and it's been through my entire career, I refuse. I've never done a show high or drunk. I've never done an interview fucked up. And so I refuse to do this one that same way. I was like, I'm not going to take my pain medicine before.
Really?
I do this interview. I'm not going to be here, like, glossed out, trying to fight a knot or some shit.
Yeah, when you are on your pain meds, is there a certain element of that where you just sort of feel like you're just sort of...
Yeah, 100%, you know? And that's why I try, like, when I'm doing that type of shit, I try to do one or two things. I try to be in the studio or make sure I'm at home.
Right. You
know? Because I don't never want to be in a situation where I'm known for, like, oh, yeah, Macko's nodding out so-and-so situation, and people not understanding, like, yo, like, this man's a lot of fucking pain.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, pain you can't even imagine. So it's like, I never want people to misconstrue my shit. And I've never been one to try and glorify the drug use as much. And I'm going to talk about it in my rap songs and shit, because let's be real about it, when we rapping, we're not just talking about our current life. We're talking about, a lot of times we mix things happen in the past with things happen in the present, with things that's happening in the future, you know, that's how we do it.
But listening to your new album, it seems like your brain goes to drugs a lot when it's music making time.
Well, yeah, because I've been on drugs a lot when it's music making time. I just told you, you know, when I'm trying to make sure, like, if I'm on drugs, I'm in the studio.
Okay.
But I want to use it for something.
So the lean and shit, that makes a reappearance when you're in the studio. Do you feel like that's the appropriate
only
time?
Lean only if I feel like I'm going to be sick. And that's it.
Really?
That will stop
you from getting sick. I'm going to be honest. I've never really thought about lean from like a medical perspective.
Well, I mean, it's cough syrup.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if you have any excuse to drink a cup of lean, then think about it. I mean, now them fucking junkies, bro, it's 90 a lot.
You ever notice that you'll like never see the Migos drinking lean on Instagram and shit?
Yeah.
I don't think that means that they're not drinking lean, but it's interesting to see what rappers clean up their image publicly.
Yeah, but look at where they are now. Yeah. Biggest group in the fucking world. Do you really want to be the opioid group?
Probably a lot of brands probably don't want to see them with pints. That's what I would assume the motivation might be.
You can do whatever the fuck you want to do when the camera's off, but don't want to see you with the pints.
And people who don't really know what's going on, to them, like, they'll see you with a double cup, meh, whatever. They see you with a fucking bottle of medicine, and they start to get freaked out. They start to really realize what's going on.
What's going on.
Yeah. It's weird.
But I mean, in the last... In the last 9 months, I probably drank lean 2 times.
Mm.
Same. Yeah. Probably. So I mean, I don't partake in anything else. I gave up all drugs. More so just because I didn't want to have any other complications from anything else that was going on. And I mean, being high on shit when you're in an enormous amount of pain isn't the best thing.
Mm.
Here, you know.
Like, right. Do you ever think that you could use sort of like the reputation you have as being like very early in terms of fashion or hip hop or certain things culturally? Like, I look at Ian Connor. It's like a dude who kind of like lost out on a lot of the opportunities that he maybe had at a certain point, but then completely went independent with his own brands
and is just running shit,
which I think is pretty amazing. And it feels like with what you've done, Do you ever think that you could have like a similar career trajectory?
I'm doing those things in the background, and I mean, and it's almost time to bring those things out. I mean, I got my YouTube up to 165,000 subscribers on the low, I'm channeling that into something that I can't really speak on right now, but I'm doing that. I've been doing a lot of fashion stuff around the world, a lot of collabs, a lot of work for people, and I've just been building that repertoire up. And I'll say this just so, I mean, I just applied for A&Rship at Capitol Records.
Oh, so shout out to Jeff Vaughn.
Yeah, that's a pride.
I've seen that on his Instagram.
I'm really excited to see if I can get that done for, because the fact of the matter is, once you have one, it's a label I already know about, obviously, because I'm over there.
Uh-huh.
And two, once you have a salary running, you know, streams of income, once you have a salary running, I'm able to focus a little bit more on those other things and make them come to fruition a lot faster than I do now.
Do you feel like you would be able to be an employee at this point? Like, is that, like, you might not have had that temperament 5, 6, 7 years ago, but you probably do now?
Yeah, I do now because I understand what teamwork. I wish I had a team that was reliable. And so I understand what it's like to want to have a reliable teammate.
Right.
And if I was able to exist as part of a reliable team, I would appreciate that for myself. You know, just being able to call and say, hey, team member, you know, what are we doing? Let's make this person's dream come true for this or that. And that's just something that I'm able to say within myself I'm able to do. And because I already get to be a boss 99% of my day.
Right.
You know, so being a worker for 1% of the day, I mean, what is, you got to learn. And if I figure through that work, I'll learn how to be a better boss.
Yeah. Now I can, like, I'm in the same boat as you. It's like when I was younger, I could have never had a job. I just didn't have the temperament for it.
Yeah.
And actually, to be honest, I still look at myself and I'm like, I don't think you could really have like a job.
Not a
like,
job.
You know,
a form of job.
You know, where you have to go in and do some sort of duty. I can understand it now. I could like fit into a certain extent. Yeah. Now I like look back at myself and I'm like, damn, I wish I was 18. That I was smart enough to have realized that probably my best bet was to just like buckle down and work and really hard structure. In school and like, you know, have that foundation to build
and
on.
Have that structural foundation.
Instead of just thinking I knew everything.
We thought we knew everything, bro.
Yeah.
But it's weird. We did all right.
How do you tell kids that though? How do you tell a kid hey, you don't know shit? They don't
You can't because not everybody will turn out like us.
Right. And when you have that young artist, it's a lot of times it's like they're going to go with the people who allow them to do what they want to do. And that's why when people are like, oh, how could this person that's associated, like how did the label let the artist or how did the management let this artist do all these drugs? It's like, bro, the artist is going to go with the people that let them do what they want to do.
We will sneak off and go make it happen. We don't need, you can tell us stop doing that shit all you want to.
Somebody who wants to do drugs is very resourceful usually.
I remember one time Petum told me not to do drugs. Now I showed up at a fucking hotel on God knows how many hits of acid. That's all I can say about that story, because that story got wild. I mean, I was off so much fucking acid, bro.
And they weren't feeling it, I'm guessing?
Oh, fuck no, bro.
I couldn't see P being playing, real tolerant of an acid trip.
I was covered in mud.
Wow.
Yeah, bro. It was a fucking trip, bro. Yeah, bro. 100%. So, you know, I can honestly say that. And, you know, I remember and to do that, I snuck out here to L.A. Now, I took care of business. You know, I sold out shows and, you know, did my interviews. And I was on time for everything I had to do. And I never was, you know, drugged out during one of those. Like I told you, I'd never done that before. But,
right.
You know, at the same time, they was, you know, strict. Don't drugs, Macko. No rock star shit. And sure enough, I snuck off to go do them.
Right.
So, I mean, you can do whatever you want to do. But I feel like I said, you can tell the kids how it's gonna turn out, because we still had a certain drive in us to let us know our limits,
right,
to where we could and couldn't go, even within ourselves. And a lot of these kids don't have that. You know, they depend on a fucking YouTube video, instructional video to tell them how far they should go, or goddamn the Twitter conscience, that's what I call it. You know, the hive mind that exists on Twitter.
That's the weird part is that I feel like if these kids, like they're able to take in information so easily. How at a certain point when you see Juice and Fredo and Peep and Yams and all these people die, it's like, doesn't that just kind of make you want to back off a little bit? Like I sometimes that worries me. It's like, how many examples do we need?
They need a million, bro.
Yeah, apparently.
Apparently.
Every generation needs their own.
Because
examples.
They make the villains out of the heroes. Yeah. You know? It's like that fucking line from Batman. That's one of the best lines ever in the movies, you know? You either die a hero or you live long enough to see yourself become the villain.
Mm.
And that's what the kids want. You know, they either want you to die a hero, you know, or they wait until you try and tell them a better way, and then they vilify you.
Right.
You know? And how do you escape that? It's not until conversations like this now where how many years later is it after they vilified me that now we can just sit here and just casually laugh about it and talk about it where I don't have any fucking animosity or energy toward it so people normally don't give a fuck. And we can just laugh about it and it's like, oh, damn, man, you guys were pretty stupid to think that, you know? But by then, look how many people have died. Look how many people you just named.
And also, it's just, you know that the industry is always ready for its next kid that is willing to talk about shit in a totally ignorant sense and will make that sound cool to the young kids.
They're always ready for the next tragedy. They're always ready. They prep it. They prep the tragedy. They can see how it's happening. They can see this kid, he's a star. He's a star. But they really mean like he's a comet. You know what I'm saying? They don't really, because stars shine forever. They mean, you know, he's a comet. Oh, I can see him taking off. And you see that burnout happen too. And they don't try to stop it.
Let me ask you this though. Do you think that, like, what should the management and the label do in a situation like Juice WRLD's, where you have an artist traveling constantly, in the studio constantly, making a shitload of money, making a shitload of music, but he's all fucked up on pills?
Because he was trying to avoid some extra charges, and I feel like...
I don't know if I buy that, though. I feel like he might have just been all fucked up on perks in the first place, and then the fucking the feds zoom in, and he just... got so freaked out
it depends on what he was on, perks or Oskies. If he was on perk 10s, all that fucking Tylenol, if he took a whole bottle, that would have killed him by itself. If he was on 30s, you can't freak out on 30s, bro. You can freak out and your heart will go up. But they're saying he took a bottle of whatever it was, you know, a bunch of them.
Yeah, I don't know.
You know? So even if they hit him with the Narcan, if he was with 10s, then the Tylenol would have killed him. But if they hit him with Narcan on the 30s, I don't see why he wouldn't have lived, you know? Because Narcan can handle fentanyl. Fentanyl is, you know, thousands of times stronger than OxyContin, right?
Right.
So if it can take out fentanyl, it should be able to take out the OxyContin no matter how many milligrams it is, right? So I'm feeling like he took a bunch of 10s, maybe, and that's what killed him. I feel like that Tylenol, because they said his heart, they said they hit him with the Narcan and he came back, right? He was conscious and aware, and then he seized and his heart fucking dropped out, right? That sounds like a Tylenol overdose to me, you know? It sounded like his blood thinned out and he couldn't clot, right?
Are we still just, we're waiting on more information about exactly what happened?
I think we're waiting on more information for that, but at the same time, I feel like either way it's a tragedy because you can't control his situation. I mean, look, I never really was like, heavy in his music. While, you know, the girl I care about, she's really heavy in his music.
Yeah.
And so I started listening to it like super heavy, like right before he passed and right after. And I can hear him speaking on his own drug use, you know, and I feel like he knew that it was copious, but I feel like he was still teeter tottering between heavy use and an addiction. You know? Because when you're addicted, it's a lot harder for you to speak on it so clearly. When you just want people to leave you alone so you can do your drugs, then you speak on it in an intelligent manner. Like, okay, look, this is, yeah, I know I'm doing these and it could kill me and whatnot, but like, yo, chill out. You know what I'm saying? I'll be all
right. Right.
And I feel like that's how he was speaking about it. So I don't think he just OD'd on the plane and just like, oh, yeah, fuck it. Oh, I'm doing all the pills. You know, I don't think it happened like that.
No, I mean, I definitely don't think he wanted anything like that to happen. But I mean, I will say the Juice is different than somebody like Pump, where Pump, I don't know if he's even doing drugs now, but I never felt like Pump wanted to hear it in terms of like people telling him how bad the drugs were.
Right.
Whereas Juice would gladly engage
in a conversation about
it. He would gladly, like, the conversation would go there all the time unprovoked to end up talking about, I remember him asking me one time, like, I took 7 the other day. You think that's bad? I'm like, yes, I think that's bad.
Yeah, see, that's the thing about it. I feel like anybody that'll communicate on that level about it knows or is worried about their own addiction. Have I reached addiction to you?
And he's someone who would be talking to me about doing it in high school, like being off hella Xans in high school.
Back, you know?
But he seemed to like understand the nature of his addiction and to be very much like looking at it, and he's aware of it and conscious of it, which a lot of people are so caught up in the middle of it that they can't be honest about it.
And that's why I think he was a different case. I don't think that he was someone that said, I don't feel like that was something that happened due to an addiction state. I feel like it happened more out of fear. You know, they had a fuckload of guns and pounds on that flight. And I feel like he felt like, you know, I'm already finna go down for these fucking pounds.
But the truth is that,
head on top of it.
We'll probably never know if he knew about the weed and the guns and everything like that. You know, like, to what extent does he know? But he should have probably assumed that like he wasn't going to be the one getting in trouble for it.
As an artist, when you got your troops with you, you know something.
You got a whole bunch of people there, though, that are going to take the charge.
You got your troops with you, and that's why I feel like they fucked up. I feel like whoever was on that plane, at the point where he had all them pills and he feel like he got to do something like that, his friend's supposed to take some of them pills away. And they're supposed to divvy them up. I understand he in the terminal and there's no bathroom to flush them down, all that shit, man. Spread that shit out. Spread those charges out. Spread whatever it is out. Because now we don't even know what's going on with the charges just coming from the fucking pounds or whatever going on with that whole situation, right?
Right.
So if it was able to end like that after he died, it could have ended
but
like
the,
that.
But the Fed said it was a dead case, like in the sense that they're not even trying to pursue it because I think that they know that nobody on board is going to talk about it. So they got nothing to go on.
You know what I'm saying?
Which is kind of crazy because that means that even this, it's kind of like the perfect crime, you know? Which is kind of amazing that it worked out. Like, aside from the fucking juice situation, it's kind of like, wow, that really was the way to do that.
Yeah. So it's like, it's kind of wild. Yeah. I think it's really sad that that's how, you know, you have to lose such a phenomenal artist, to a situation like that, you know? Regardless of whether we're talking about high level drug use or, you know, addiction or whatever it is, because at the end of the day, whatever you want to call them, demons, whatever they were, you know, he was clearly dealing with them just fine enough for him to be functioning. You know, we have a bunch of artists out here that's having seizures on stage and seizures in the middle of shit going on and still not, you know, reconciling from what's going on with it, or acting like they know how it's happening. And we did lose Fredo. You know, we lost Fredo. We watched Fredo deteriorate. You know, like, it's not like he was just like something else killed him.
Right.
You know, like, that was a real legend. Like, we just watched it just eat his whole shit away, and boom, he just died, you know, at a young age.
And there's a lot of people that if they were to pass, you know, and I think Juice is actually probably like the prime example where it's like, if he passes, the fans have got to feel some degree of being implicated in a way, because it's like, this is a large percentage of what his music was about.
This is what you wanted to hear from me.
It's like, you have to learn. Like, people, we can't give up on our hope that the fans will learn something from their heroes dying.
Yeah. I mean, I always hope that. That's why I'm trying to give me, like, oh, yeah, make another, you guessed it, or make another. I'm like, no, I'm not going to make another of whatever it is, because that's not where we're at. Mm. You know, I feel like what I need to make for you is what you need, not always what you want.
Yeah, where do you feel like you are at music-wise at this point?
I feel like I'm in a mature state of rambunctiousness. I feel like I'm an older rebel, you know, where now I understand how to rebel while existing inside of a system. Because if you try and rebel too hard, then the system just system just shoots you out, you know, and you never, the impact of what you're doing never really gets felt. And if you do too little, then, you know, no one ever even realizes that you're trying to fight against what's going on. But if you make the right moves and you still make the music enjoyable for the kids, then they talk about your life, right, and they relate it to their life. But things still happen. Just like you hear, I'm on the rocks, you know, and you're like, oh, he's on fucking Sunset. Oh, shit. It's instantly relatable whether you're, if you know anything about L.A. whatsoever, you know what I'm saying? And at the same time, when the kids hear, like, I got the song with Fabo, my only feature on there, shouts to Fabo. When you hear that Tekken walk and that snap music, it automatically bring in the people that's my age who they remember, you know what I'm saying, going to snap. But the content that's going in there is still, you know, I got to take it a walk. Yeah, I'm talking about the drugs at the same time. But does this mean you have to do them? No, I'm not telling you to do them to be cool. No, I'm not telling you, like, I'm doing these drugs to make me feel better either. I'm just saying this is where it is. So this is my rebellion against whatever this structure is. And when it's time to make the more intelligible music to say, oh, yeah, you know, stand up and fight for this, whatever it is, I'll do that. But right now, I feel like there's so much negativity and bullshit going on in the world, especially with this president we got now and the state of affairs in the world, that right now people just need to have a good fucking time.
Mm.
And I'm more interested, like I was when I made You Guessing and shit, I'm more interested in giving people a good time right now than I am with some fucking message to try and force feed them. I don't want
to
do that.
I mean, it could be tough, like, to you know, feed the people what they need to hear, but mixing it in. It's like mixing the aspirin with the medicine when you got a kid or a dog who doesn't want to take the pill.
And you got to hide it.
You got to hide it.
You got to hide it in there, man. And, you know, and that's what I'm doing. And I feel like, you know, a lot of times it's a simple conversation of expressionism. But people don't feel like they don't get to talk about these things in an open platform.
Mm.
You know, they don't get to talk about how they feel in a real way. You know, they don't get to talk about why they're doing the drugs. You know, that's why I put, like, in the intro of my tape, you know, I put, you know, the part where I'll let people do their own research, but it's a part in there. It's an interview where the guy's like, you know, yeah, my girlfriend broke up with me, because she woke up and walked in on me nodding, you know, and that was really relatable to me because I remember my girl telling me I'm a fucking addict or whatever it was from the simple effects of my pain medicine making me nod off and telling me I'm gonna leave me, you know. But at the end of the day, I'm still trying to fight, even though it feels like I'm under the control of something. I'm still trying to fight, you know.
Right.
I'm still trying to fight whatever's going on, and I feel like that's what the kids need to realize. Like, just keep fighting, keep fighting. Like, don't let all this shit just wear you down so much that you stop fighting. All the artists dying, all the fucking drugs. Don't never let that supplement who you are on the inside. That fight that you should have. Like, don't let that shit go nowhere.
Right.
You need it.
You feel like you're going to be off the pain meds at some point in the future, and are you excited about that?
Man, I'm so fucking ready, bro.
How long do you think?
I'm hoping that it's my birthday's in April. I'm hoping by then. I'm hoping by then I can just live a normal fucking life.
You think you're going to be going through it, getting off it?
No, because I went to Korea, Japan, and China. And, you know, those places are really strict on any kind of drug whatsoever, even if you just have them.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't have anything with me, and it was for a little while, and I was okay.
So you could get by for a week without it?
I did. I was fine for a week. I mean, like, you know, it's processes that your body go through.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you know anything about opioids or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's processes that your body goes through, which my body definitely went through.
Uh-huh.
It's what it is. Take a hot shower, read a book.
Yeah, kids.
Work out.
You want to get off the Xans? Read a book.
Well, Xans are different. Xan withdrawal can, in fact, kill you. So please go to a rehab clinic doctor if you need to get off Xans or alcohol, because those two withdrawals can kill you. For opioids, just be strong, man.
Yeah.
Mental. It's all mental.
Hold it down. Well, shit, man. It's been a very interesting conversation.
Fuck yeah, Adam.
Appreciate it.
Took a while to first have it, but I think it came just in time.
Doing an interview in 2018... and having questions from 2016 is very interesting. I mean, I spruced it up a little bit, but
I mean, it's 2020 now.
So. I had questions about Phil Collins.
I mean,
because at the time you had a song like a Phil Collins sample or some shit on your tape.
Black Phil Collins was the album,
right?
Yeah, and that album was beautiful, beautiful album. And they took it down.
It's hidden from the internet. It's not even on YouTube or anything.
It's on Spotify.
Oh, really?
I managed to sneak it back up. Come on now.
Nice. That's good. OG Macko.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been doing it since before you ever would have thought that you would be an OG.
Yeah, and now I really am.
Kind of grew into the name.
Grew into it.
Actually, I guess I grew into the 22, but then I grew out of it. But I still have the same name. But
still the same name.
It's been 14 years since I was 22. But I had the name for 7 years before that.
You're about to hit it 22 again.
Goddamn.
Fuck.
Damn, that is weird. I missed the 20th anniversary of me having this fucking stupid-ass nickname. Can't wait till I'm 45.
Yeah.
That'll be great. OG Macko.
Adam 22.
Appreciate you, G. Coolest podcast in the world. Check us out on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. Like, comment, and subscribe. NoJumper.com if you want support. Go listen to my man's project.
Macko got that flame.